Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Thursday, January 23rd, 2014. Corporate news channels flooded with coverage of Justin Bieber's arrest for drunk driving in Miami. He's working on his bad boy cred. And all over the place, we have pictures in the orange jumpsuit of the booking photo of Justin Bieber. And the bangs are gone. He's trying to work on his early 20s tough boy look. And frankly, I don't give a damn. Justin Bieber's DUI is his problem. It's not a national story. It's what the media loves to distract us with. And let me add a salacious tidbit that I haven't seen in the American media. I was in Brazil in September on a business trip, and Justin Bieber reportedly went to a brothel in Rio de Janeiro. And they tried to sneak him in and sneak him out, but the paparazzi found him. And I guess he's, you know, trying to work on shaking his adolescent image. But the guy who's in jail today who I care the most about is Roger Shuler in Shelby County, Alabama. And I am pained to report to you that today marks 4 months of his being illegally detained behind a sequence of events that are Kafka-esque. And that at this point, I can offer no promise that he will be released in the near future. Andrew Craig of the Justice Integrity Project, who, like me, has been an ally of Shuler's, has been working very hard to generate more coverage, to counter some of the false notions that were put into play by the New York Times, which ran that booking photo of Roger Shuler. And unlike Justin Bieber, Roger Shuler was not smiling in his booking photo. He'd been roughed up by the deputies who arrested him, and we now have proof that there was no warrant. In the hearing where Roger Shuler got a 90-day sentence and was convicted for resisting arrest on October 23rd last year, the judge asked the prosecution, "Was there a warrant?" The prosecutor said, "No warrants, Your Honor." That's at the fundamental issue here, that this is a lawless process that has put Roger Shuler behind bars. He doesn't have the money to hire a lawyer, and our efforts to recruit a pro bono First Amendment attorney have not been fruitful so far. I will link to Andrew Craig's story, which is a very detailed recap if you're just learning about Roger Shuler's dilemma. You can read it and catch up. There's a lot of good information that Andrew has assembled in this post. On to other news. Another independent federal privacy watchdog has concluded that the NSA's program to collect bulk phone records from us has provided only minimal benefits in counterterrorism efforts, is illegal, and should be shut down. Now, you and I had never heard of this before, but in 2007, Congress created an independent agency called the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. And after Ed Snowden's disclosures, Obama referred the matters to this board, and today they issue their 238-page report. Now, it's a five-member panel, and two of the individuals worked in the Bush Justice Department, and they dissented from some of the findings. And the president continues to ignore the serious concerns, both the fact that this massive program hasn't been useful, and as Bill Binney, our NSA whistleblower, who knows very well the inner workings of the agency, it floods them with data to the point that they're overwhelmed. But Obama is dead set against limiting or ending this program. And this group says, quote, the program lacks a viable legal foundation under Section 215 of the Patriot Act. And this goes to the point that Senator Ron Wyden was trying very hard to make for over a year. And he was constrained by his own restrictions under his security clearance. But he kept telling us that there was this interpretation of the Patriot Act that would shock and astound the American people if they knew the extent to which this information was being collected. That is why he asked James Clapper, the director of national intelligence, point blank, is there any program that's collecting millions of records on millions of Americans? And Clapper lied under oath. Quoting again, in addition to the lack of this viable legal foundation under Section 215, the program implicates constitutional concerns under the First and Fourth Amendments, raises serious threats to privacy and civil liberties as a policy matter, and has shown only limited value. As a result, the board recommends that the government end the program. The report also fills us in that the secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court produced no judicial opinion detailing its legal rationale for the program until August of 2013. Yeah, last August. Even though it has been issuing orders to phone companies for the records since May of 2006. And of course, before that, the records were being coughed up in a completely lawless manner. And Obama has helped legitimize the lawbreaking that preceded his administration, first by voting for the FISA reform law back in 2008, and then by signing its extension last year. And so this is another report that will be ignored unless we see some real action from Congress along the lines of a church committee and a serious effort to get to the bottom of these issues and fix them. And at this point, I don't see any real movement in that direction, but you know I will keep pushing for it. We recently conducted an interview over at BoilingFrogsPost.com in the Processing Distortion series with a young man who is working to stop the NSA and its illegal actions through state laws, state legislation. And we learned today that Arizona State Senator Kelly Ward has introduced a bill, SB 1156, in Arizona, called the Fourth Amendment Protection Act. It would ban the state from engaging in activities which help the NSA carry out their warrantless data collection programs or even make use of the information on a local level. And this is an effort that is growing. We've seen a bill like this introduced in California, and there are at least five other states, roughly that number, where these methods are being pursued, and I fully support them. Also, I want to mention that today at BoilingFrogsPost.com, the latest interview in the Processing Distortion series is with NSA whistleblower Russell Tice. And I talked with Russ about his reaction to the president's speech on January 17th, the very limited reforms being put forward by the president at this point. And Russ Tice, as usual, does not disappoint. He is very clear in his criticism and his concern that this could just be a distraction. And in particular, he feels that it's likely that as Obama has promised to end the phone collection program as it is, that it will be reconstituted under a different name and under different authorities, like Tice has seen so many times before. Also, I want to credit Carl Howard, who is a regular listener to the podcast and one of my biggest boosters on Facebook. Thank you, Carl. He corrected a statement that I made yesterday That is that I criticized Rachel Maddow for her excessive coverage of the Chris Christie scandal in Virginia, and now the indictment of Bob McDonnell, Chris Christie in New Jersey, and now the indictment of Bob McDonnell, the most recent Republican governor of the state of Virginia. And I said that I hadn't seen her cover Obama's NSA speech. And it's because I missed her show last Friday, and Carl Howard sent me a link to the video file at MSNBC. And Rachel, you have my sincere apology.
Excuse me.
And one more on the NSA. You may recall that Ed Snowden was subject to a background check before he got his clearance to work for the NSA contractor Booz Allen Hamilton in Honolulu. You may also recall that the guy accused of shooting and killing 12 people at the Washington Navy Yard last year, a man named Aaron Alexis, he had a security clearance, and both of them were processed by a company called U.S. Investigation Services. This is a private company that works for the government to review the security clearance applications of individuals. And in a report released today, we learned that this company, in order to generate monthly and quarterly profits, failed to complete actual background checks in about 40% of the cases they handled in recent years. And that more than 650,000 of these investigations perhaps have not been completed. Now, this puts a big potential hole in the system that is supposed to protect our secrets, our sources, our methods, our practices. And it's part of this privatization and profiteering on the threats that have been hyped since 9/11. And it's amazing that the NSA has been so busy spying on us that it shoved off to a for-profit company the very critical process of vetting its employees. And USIS doesn't just work for NSA. And so our entire security intelligence community could be infiltrated with people who can't be trusted, whose background check investigations were not completed. Why? Because at USIS, at the end of the month, they said, close out these records, send them in as completed, because that's how we get paid. And so, because of their desire to make more money, USIS has compromised the security of the very agencies that they are supposed to be protecting. I want to thank the people who subscribe to this podcast and make my work possible, pay for the ink cartridges that I go through to print out all the stories that I bring you each day in our news and comment. And I want to single out Debbie Newell in Los Angeles. She renewed her annual subscription, and then she renewed it again. And she sponsors what we call a scholarship for a listener who doesn't have the means to subscribe to this podcast. And Debbie, I thank you very much for your longtime support of my work and your generosity in extending a subscription to another person. And I'd like to invite you to sign up. Go to my website, peterbcollins.com. Under my picture on the homepage, follow the links that say sign up. You can choose $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever fits your budget. Our best deal is the annual $50 subscription. And when you sign up for a new annual, we've got a bag of kick-ass Kona coffee beans ready to send out to you, and a bonus book from my treasure trove of books of people who've been interviewed on this program. So don't delay. I need your help. I need your support. We've had a few people who couldn't renew for or chose not to renew for whatever reason. And I need to keep our ranks fleshed out so that I can afford to do this on a daily basis. The other way you can support us, whether you subscribe or not, is to take our offer for a free audiobook download from audible.com. They have 150,000 audiobooks in their archive, and you can grab one for free. All you have to do is follow the links in this podcast show file or the link from the banner ad, the vertical banner ad on the left side of my website, and it'll enable you to sign up for a free 30-day trial at Audible. If you cancel before the end of the 30 days, you won't owe them a penny. You'll get the free audiobook download. And in either case, Audible will pay me $15 for each trial membership. So click on over there, and it's a no-risk, no-cost way that you can kick in 15 bucks of somebody else's money to support my work. I mean, how cool is that? And as I mentioned, I just got the first check for people who've been doing the Audible trial. And I really appreciate those who have checked it out. It seems to be these presidential panels are popping up with reports and new assignments. I've got a couple of them for you. As you may recall, in 2012, there were long lines at polling places, and many people didn't get to vote. And so the president put together a commission headed by his lawyer, Bob Bauer, and the longtime Republican lawyer who worked for Mitt Romney last time, Ben Ginsburg. And the two of them co-chaired this panel, which is told to find ways to end the delays at polling places. Now, this is a problem, and it deserves to be addressed. But the panel, because they only wanted to put forward proposals that they could unanimously agree on, didn't address the most significant issues that obstruct voting, discourage people from participating, or outright strip them of their right to vote in an illegal manner. And these voter suppression tactics are part of a concerted and national strategy by Republicans to reduce the pool of people who vote for Democrats. And so I don't have any problem with this panel trying to end the delays. But what about the people who can't get in line? People who don't have a photo ID in Pennsylvania or Texas or elsewhere. And these are conscious efforts to limit participation, and this panel isn't going to do a damn thing about them. Now, kudos to the president, because yesterday he announced a new White House panel, a task force to investigate rape on college campuses. One in five female students get assaulted, but only one in eight victims actually report it. And the epidemic of rape in this country is severe. At this point, nearly 22 million American women and 1.6 million American men have been raped in their lifetimes. And on campus, it's a problem because often the campus cops don't want to create hysteria. They also don't want to get a reputation that this is a campus where rapes occur. And so there's heavy pressure to suppress information about these crimes. And that disempowers women who need to know if there is a rapist running around on their campus. So Obama gave the task force 90 days to come up with recommendations for colleges to prevent and respond to rape. That can't hurt, not at all. Shell Oil got a setback from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals here in San Francisco yesterday, as it says that it will not approve drilling in Arctic waters this summer because they say that Shell and its partners have not fulfilled the range of environmental checks, and they haven't properly assessed the risks of a blowout and a spill. Shell has already spent about $5 billion looking for oil in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, and you may recall in 2012 one of their barges was floating around up there out of their control. And it just, was one of those vivid examples that, are these guys really going to drill in the Arctic? So it's good that that has been set back. We'll see if it holds. In West Virginia, the 300,000-plus people whose water has been tainted so they couldn't drink or shower because Freedom Industries had a tank that leaked into the Elk River? Well, in a setback, the company Freedom Industries finally reported that there was another chemical in the tank that leaked, and it's called PPH. And I don't know just how toxic PPH is, but it, together with the combined chemicals called crude MCHM, are used to clean coal. And of course, coal is the dirtiest fuel we have. The way it is mountaintop mined in West Virginia is the ugliest way to extract it from the earth. And even after you put chemicals on coal, it ain't clean. But that's what these chemicals are intended to do. And once again, I'll just say that we hear all the time Republicans railing against regulation. Regulation that gets in the way of profit and business. Well, public safety is more important than either of those. Reach for your bullshit detector. Israel claims to have foiled an Al-Qaeda attack on Tel Aviv. They tell us that three Palestinians have been arrested. They allegedly plotted bombing, shooting, and a suicide bomb attack on the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv. And they claim that this was occurring under the direction of the latest leader of Al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri. And in the fine print, it says that Shin Bet, the Israeli Secret Service, said the three suspects made contact with Al-Qaeda over the internet. Now, that is very different from Zawahiri directing them to blow themselves up at the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv. And so already, the story that's been floated here has holes in it. And I am very skeptical of this. If you recall, last summer, we had the shutdown of American embassies. I think it was during the first weekend in August. We were told that an intercept had suggested that there was a coordinated attack being planned. And, you know, how stupid do they think we are? Because after all of the revelations about the NSA, do you think Zawahiri is communicating with potential militants on his side via the internet? I mean, I don't think he's that stupid. But that's what we are supposed to believe. There's a reporter at the Washington Post named Adam Goldman, and I'm about to praise him, but first I've got to smack him back. He appeared on the PBS NewsHour last week after the report about the Benghazi attacks, in which they told us that they could have been prevented. And one of the critical factors in taking a look at what happened in Benghazi in 2012 on the 11th of September is whether or not Al-Qaeda was involved. Because that's one of the charges that is made that attempts to turn what, you know, appeared to be a local event into something more sinister, more carefully planned. There is zero indication that Al-Qaeda had any connection to the attack on the mission in Benghazi in any way, shape, or form. And Adam Goldman acknowledged that in an interview on PBS NewsHour. But then he went on to say that it doesn't really matter whether it was Al-Qaeda or some other jihadi group. And it does matter, Mr. Goldman. The sloppiness, the laziness, where Al-Qaeda is blamed when there's only a tenuous connection. Or people who are flying an Al-Qaeda flag are then seen as franchise holders. And it simply doesn't work that way. And if reporters are blasé about that distinction, then it muddies the water for everyone else. Now to my plaudit for Adam Goldman. In the Washington Post today, he published a fascinating story that could provide the evidence for indictment for torture of individuals who worked in the black sites, their superiors who approved the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, up to and including waterboarding. And Goldman pulls back the curtain over the black site in Poland. And it's fascinating to read. I will link to the story, and you can read it for yourself. We paid $15 million to Poland to lease a facility, including a guest house, where we established a secret prison. This was after we first parked Abu Zubaydah and one other suspect named al-Nashiri at a chicken coop in Thailand. And when it became clear that the place in Thailand wasn't going to work, they got in touch with Poland, and Poland said, oh, yeah, you can use this place. It's a little two-story villa about 300 miles from Warsaw. And so they did, and Goldman's story continues to tell us how Mike Seeley, a senior intelligence officer, was tapped by the CIA to run the Polish black site. It recounts the torture techniques that he used, including the 183 episodes of waterboarding on Abu Zubaydah. And it's chilling to read this. And Goldman suggests that the Senate Intelligence Committee report on detention, torture, rendition, that some form of it is going to be released soon. And am I the only voice in the United States calling for justice, calling for accountability for the people who broke our laws, who violated our treaty obligations? Chloe's upset about this. And got involved in torture programs after 9/11. It was wrong then, it's wrong now, and it's wrong to cover it up. It's wrong to obstruct justice and prevent the full investigation, disclosure, and legal action against those involved, right up to Rumsfeld and Cheney and Addington. And yes, Bush, George W. Bush. And finally today, I want to commend Bill Hartung, William D. Hartung, who has just published a report about Lockheed Martin and how the company seriously exaggerates the number of jobs created by certain federal and Pentagon construction programs. Bill Hartung, you can look him up at peterbcollins.com. He was on our show about a year and a half ago. He wrote a fascinating book about the history of Lockheed, which is now merged up as Lockheed Martin. And I'll put up a link to this report so you can read it for yourself, but let me just tick off a couple of the key findings. Lockheed Martin claims that the F-35 combat aircraft program produces 125,000 jobs. That claim is roughly double the likely number of jobs actually sustained by the program, which is closer to 50, or at tops, 60,000. The company claims there is significant work being done on the F-35 in 46 states. And this is a conscious effort so that they can play the jobs card and shower members of Congress all over the country with campaign contributions in order to hold and keep these contracts. And when you look at the claim that 46 states benefit from the F-35 program, well, the lion's share goes to Texas and California. We get, those two states get over half the jobs. The top five states get 70% of the jobs. And the bottom five states that are counted in the 46 number have minuscule jobs, like 12 jobs, all right, that are linked to the F-35. And so this pulls back the curtain once again on corporate lies and the way the American people are manipulated, and the corporate media reports this stuff without challenging the credibility of the information. Also, 88 contractors operating in foreign countries got a piece of the F-35 program. And there's evidence indicating that Northrop Grumman and Honeywell have used or produced F-35 components in China, which is a direct violation of U.S. laws banning the use of Chinese parts in U.S. defense equipment. And so on the one hand, they lie to the American people saying that they're, you know, producing far more jobs than is actually true. They lie about the geographic distribution of that to enhance their political power. And then they cover up their own violations as they outsource production to low-cost countries like China, and China is on the shit list. We're not permitted to buy military parts made in China. But hey, when it's the military-industrial media complex, they can do whatever they damn well please.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until